Thursday, and I'm grumpy. Get fired up. The Tommy C Show is brought to you by Truth Verified. For all those who consider themselves a source of truth and who fight daily against the prolific disinformation campaign propagated by social and traditional media sources, Truth Verified is a brand that is bound by nothing but intellectual honesty. Thank you for supporting the Tommy C Show through the purchase of Truth Verified merchandise at therealtommyc.com/merchandise. The truth is strong and the power is local. Hey, it is Thursday, April 15th. 2021, thank you for tuning in to the Tommy C Show, the resource for patriotic truth and action. The podcast that is now moving to 3 live shows every week. Yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit. Yeah, I see that in the chat. Look at me. I got no hat, right? Just figured I had to prove a point. I posted a meme yesterday with how gray I've gotten. Just had to prove the point. Those on Parler know what I'm talking about. But good evening and welcome to episode 111. Hope today finds you at peace or working toward it. That's right, I'm going to be live now on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. So 3 nights a week. My Tuesday show previously was recorded at another time of the day, and I would publish it, at whatever point I could get to it. But I'm going to start doing that one live at the same time at 8 p.m. Central. So we'll be live 3 nights a week. And then we'll have those shows will usually they upload to the podcast platforms, be it Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM. There's like 24 of them that I'm on now. Those will upload usually within an hour of this recording on Tuesday and Thursday nights and Sunday mornings. But then the video recordings take a little bit longer to process and get onto YouTube. So my goal is to have those published, as soon as possible after the recordings. But more than likely, you can look for the recordings on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So if you're watching live, you get to see the show first before anybody else, of course. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to doing 3 shows live, and who knows where we'll go from that. I have a few things tonight that I want to get to. A couple in specifics. Want to talk about some inexcusable excuses and also the assault on our judiciary, which has been a hot topic in the news today. So I don't want to go as stale as the arguments out there, the hand-wringing out there, and the packing the court bit of it. I'm going to go a different angle with it a little bit and talk about how our founders felt about the judiciary and what their concerns were between the judiciary and the legislature specifically. First, if you're watching this recording on YouTube, please hit the thumbs up button and subscribe. It really helps if you hit that thumbs up button and you subscribe. The more I can build subscribers, the more options I'll have with YouTube, including being able to live stream directly to YouTube at some point in the future, which I would like to do as well. If you're listening on Apple, please consider subscribing and leaving a positive review. I would be very grateful for that. You can support the show by going to therealtommyc.com/support through the purchase of Truth Verified merchandise at therealtommyc.com or by checking out the members only section on my website for additional ways to be a part of supporting the show and to receive some cool benefits or just by sharing the show with your friends and family and everybody else in the world on all of your platforms. So, yeah, that miniature Quasimodo today came out with 3 other idiots in the Democratic Party, about this bill to pack the courts, which is, it's going to go nowhere. I mean, Pelosi has said she's not even going to bring it to the floor. I don't trust Pelosi. None of us should. We shouldn't just count on that. We don't know what they're going to do. They're capable of anything. I'm not immediately worried about this. In theory, I am, because once they bring an idea up, it's only a matter of time before they really do try to enact it and make it a rule or a law. And this one's going to be a tough one. There's no reason for it other than what we all understand, which is to shift the power in their favor. And we watch them get up there and lie about their motives and their beliefs, and it's gross. But you know, the Federalists viewed the courts as the intermediary between the people and the Congress and the presidency. The courts, through judicial review, would uphold the Constitution against attempts by the Congress or the president to enlarge their powers. And as such, the judiciary was always seen as the protector of the people, not a danger to their liberties. And that is a very important point. The judiciary really is our long-standing buffer against tyranny, in a way. And if the Democrats try to work their corruption through and change the court, I mean, it changes everything forever. Our constitutional republic is really done in terms of function. We just have another mini legislature out there. It's not a good thing, you know. And Federalist 78 said a few things, you know, regarding the judiciary and as it relates to the legislative body. Again, the Federalist Papers are so loaded with information, and there are so many of them. And I understand that they're deep and they're written in a language that was common at the time. And so they're not always the easiest thing to interpret and to comprehend. But if you read them enough, you figure it out. And the general context is unmistakable. Now, Federalist 78, it said, "If it be said that the legislative body are themselves the constitutional judges of their own powers, and that the construction they put upon them is conclusive upon other departments, it may be answered that this cannot be the natural presumption." Just stating very clearly, it is completely unnatural for the legislative body to essentially judge their own powers, or to extend their powers into a judiciary manner, essentially. They go on in Federalist 78 to say it is far more rational to suppose that the courts were designed to be an intermediate body between the people and the legislature, in order, among other things, to keep the latter within the limits assigned to their authority. A constitution is, in fact, and must be regarded by judges as a fundamental law. It therefore belongs to them to ascertain its meaning, as well as the meaning of any particular act proceeding from the legislative body. If there should happen to be an irreconcilable variance between the two, that which has the superior obligation and validity ought, of course, to be preferred, or in the other words, the Constitution ought to be preferred to the statute, the intention of the people to the intention of their agents. That last statement is key again. The intention of the people to the intention of their agents. The agents are the people we elect, and they are to act upon our intentions. It's worded so cleverly in so many ways throughout the Federalist Papers. It's so clear how concerned the Founding Fathers were in just the way they restate that sentence, that context. It's so clear how concerned they were that the government would try to suppress the people and rule over the people and not from the people. Federalist 78 goes on to say that nor does this conclusion by any means suppose a superiority of the judicial to the legislative power. It only supposes that the power of the people is superior to both. Once again, it's stated there again, two sentences later, the power of the people is superior to both. It really is frightening. And it seems so cliche to say that, because I get a little worn out hearing it's frightening, it's maddening, it's sickening. We hear those terms so often, but I don't know what other terms to use. Nauseating, it's that. It's infuriating. But to watch these Democrats in office just willfully, they swear an oath to this history, our Constitution, and all that went into it, and they behave in such antithetical ways to it. I talked about this at length in my last podcast, the oath, and I can't. We need people to be involved. The states have to be involved. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit, about what it is that the states have given up exactly and why I believe they gave it up and the fight that they now face to get it back. But it wasn't just the Federalists. The Anti-Federalists had their concerns as well. George Mason, which was a well-known Anti-Federalist, and in his speech to the Virginia Convention in June of 1788, he said a number of things. Well, one of them was, "There is one thing in which I conceive to be extremely dangerous. Gentlemen may talk of public virtue and confidence. We shall be told that the House of Representatives will consist of the most virtuous men on the continent, and that in their hands we may trust our dearest rights. This, like all other assemblies, will be composed of some bad and some good men. And considering the natural lust of power so inherent in man, I fear the thirst of power will prevail to oppress the people." Could it be, I mean, could that statement be more profound in terms of seeing exactly what is at light in front of us, the reality that we face right now? George Mason, again, on June 4, 1788, "There is one thing in which I conceive to be extremely dangerous. Gentlemen may talk of public virtue and confidence. We shall be told that the House of Representatives will consist of the most virtuous men on the continent, and in their hands we may trust our dearest rights. This, like all other assemblies, will be composed of some bad and some good men. And considering the natural lust of power so inherent in man, I fear the thirst of power will prevail to oppress the people." And that's exactly what's happened. And our founding fathers, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, tried so hard to put checks and balances in place and give us the tools to avoid these things from happening. And to be fair, those tools exist. Those tools aren't gone. But what's happened is that we, the people, have for too long were too passive to all of it. And we watched as they gave themselves more power, as they abused the power they had, and took control of more in so many levels, in so many ways. And now we're fighting a hard battle to take that away from them. And I really still believe that the only way we're going to do that is through a convention of the states. But another little bit I want to read from our founding fathers. This was another Anti-Federalist piece called Freeman One that was in the Pennsylvania Gazette in January of 1788. And in that paper, it said, "It will be found on a careful examination that many things which are indispensably necessary to the existence and good order of society cannot be performed by the federal government, but will require the agency and powers of the state legislators or sovereignties with their various appurtenances and appendages." And they went on in that paper, Freeman One, to talk about a number of things that they felt were important that the state have a control over and not the federal government. And in the federal government, they were talking about the legislature, the legislative branch, the Congress. And one of the fourth thing on the list was that they cannot appoint judges, constitute a court, or in any other way interfere in determining the courts. Okay, and that... Now, was that language specifically in our Constitution? No, that specific language did not make it into our Constitution. There's other language in there in terms of the courts. Unfortunately, it doesn't designate the number of Supreme Court justices. It does leave that ability to Congress to determine. But there was a great fear before our Constitution, during the Constitutional Convention, that that power should not be something that the Congress has. The judicial branch should be fixed in the Constitution in a way that it cannot be altered to allow for another branch to gain more power. And by the way, that paper also says that they cannot fix qualifications of electors of representatives or electors of the president or vice president. That's, you know, to touch on another recent hot button. There was a lot of things in a Freeman one that in that particular letter. It's not terribly long, but it's an interesting one to read again if you're interested. It was Freeman 1, which was in the Pennsylvania Gazette in January 23rd, 1788. There were, you know, we talk about state powers and other things they listed in here is that the federal government should not be able to interfere with, alter, or amend the Constitution of any state. And we see now with H.R. 1 how the federal government is trying to usurp the state. The state governments in so many ways, specifically with voting laws. The states need to reclaim their power. That's what this comes down to, mostly. The states need to reclaim their power. The balance of power is so important. The balance of power, when our government was founded, was seen as two things. First, was within the federal government, the balance of power between the three branches, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. But the bigger balance of power, before all of that, was the balance between federal power and state power. What the federal government can do and what the state's rights are. And that's why the 10th Amendment exists. Basically, that whatever's, you know, rights that are not already outlined in the first 9 amendments, powers that were not otherwise explicitly stated or omitted in the Constitution, are the rights of the states or the people to determine. The federal government has used that as an open-ended way to just take what they want. But the states need to reclaim that power. That balance of power is so important. And I believe over time, the states forfeited these powers in favor of receiving federal funds. Once the federal government started dangling the money carrot in front of states for various projects, the states became lazy in both function and in foresight. And if you think of it now, the amount of money that the federal government gives the states to implement and support federal programs, states have become dependent on that now. It's ridiculous. And let me read to you something else from Freeman 1, okay? These are the things that they said the federal government should not be able to interfere with when the anti-federalists were arguing in the Constitutional Convention. This was ninth in their list of, I think there were 10 or 12 things. So the federal government cannot interfere with the opening of rivers and canals, the making or regulation of roads, except post roads, building bridges, erecting ferries, establishment of state seminaries of learning, libraries, literary, religious trading or manufacturing societies, erecting or regulating the police of towns, cities, or boroughs, creating new state offices, building lighthouses, public wharves, county goals, markets, or other public buildings. They cannot make sale of state lands and other state property, receiving or appropriating the incomes of state buildings and property, or executing the state laws, altering the criminal law, nor can they do any other matter or anything appertaining to the internal affairs of any state, whether legislative, executive, or judicial, civil, or ecclesiastical. Think about that list. And the government does all of those things now. It interferes in all of those ways in every state. And it's all because of money. I talked about this a number of episodes ago. It's probably a couple months ago. That if these states start refusing some of these federal grants to support some of these federal programs, that is a step in taking back state powers. We are not going to enforce this program. We are not funding it, and we're not accepting your funds for it. Most of these programs aren't necessarily laws. They're initiatives put forward, and states have leeway, and they have ways around it. But a lot of times, the way these funds are earmarked, these states take these funds, and then if there's some discretionary purpose to it, they use the funds for other things. And they find other ways to support those programs. And that's where things have gotten corrupted within the states. The states just need to outright stop refusing, need to refuse federal funds. And it's, I don't know another way economically to hit back at the federal government with enough power and might to make a statement. And I think that is the way. But that list of things I read to you is crazy. Think of the things we're facing now. Like, you know, that the federal government should not have any ability to regulate the police of cities, towns, or boroughs. There's police reform bills and all kinds of stuff being talked about now because of the way this Congress is, right? The infrastructure. This thing started off with a bunch of infrastructure restrictions. They can't interfere with rivers and roads and bridges. And the states knew back then, these are our things to control. And we don't want federal interference in them because it becomes corrupted. Look at how far we've gotten from that. And these things are, it's maddening. To use a cliche, it's maddening. We need to be on our state legislatures, folks. And when you write your state legislators or you call them, it's a great feeling. It's a great argument you can make, I believe, when you can quote some of these things from our founding documents. When you could say, hey, I was reading from, you know, Freeman 1. You know, when the Anti-Federalists stated their fears of the federal government and the things that they didn't want the federal government to control. And among those things were, you know, go through your list of things that are personal to you and say, when are you, as my state legislator, going to take these powers back from the federal government? These are your powers inherently. What's your plan to take them back? Why do you want less power? And frame it, reframe it back on it. Put them on them. I mean, it's we've got to be pushing on our state legislatures. That is our final, it's our final stand. If we can't make any change through our state legislatures, we are fundamentally done in terms of the powers we have with our Constitution at that point. It's sad to say, but there's nowhere else we have to turn at that point other than the very ugly, vicious place that I am not going to advocate for or discuss on this show. We have to get at it. And then, you know, that kind of brings me to my next point, my last point really tonight, is inexcusable excuses. You know, I said today that conservatives who are passive are just as dangerous to our liberties as liberals who are aggressive. And I mean that. I mean that. We can't be sitting passive. And I see a lot of people come up with, I call them excuses. Okay, people may call them reasons. They may think that this is, I can't do this because. I call them excuses. Okay, and one a lot I see is, there's no leadership. There's nobody, no Jim Jordan standing out there. Or there's no, you know, Trump standing out there saying, organize in this city or do that. You don't need that. Be a leader yourself. Okay? Be a leader yourself. The leaders in our American Revolution, you know where they came from? They came from farm fields and small town shops. Some were small town, you know, professionals. Thomas Jefferson was a lawyer. George Mason, he was a farmer, a planter. Benjamin Franklin was a printer. George Washington was a farmer and a surveyor, a map maker. John Jay came from a family of merchants. Patrick Henry was a store clerk. Samuel Adams was a bookkeeper. John Hancock, he worked in his family's trading business, a merchant trader, basically. Henry, you know, Richard Henry Lee, who was the first of the Lee Resolution, which was the first attempt at putting together a constitutional convention for us, he was a justice of the peace, basically a notary at the time. So the statement that nobody is leading us is a non-starter for me. Our founding fathers came out of the small towns, came out of their farm fields, came out of their family stores, and they got out there and became politically savvy and advocated for the freedom of our country. There is no excuse. We the people, a government for, by, and of the people, it's asinine to think that we need to wait on a politician. We need a leader of our government to lead us to change our government. Think about how ridiculous that sounds. Nothing against Trump or Jim Jordan, and I love, you know, both of them, but that's not what we need. If we are to make this change, we need leaders at the ground level. We need American citizens taking the lead. And it's happening, folks. It's happening in towns. There are citizens that are starting to step up and run for office. There are citizens that are getting out there and taking back school boards. There are citizens that are getting out there and making their voices heard. Think about the number of people that have started podcasting in recent years and the number of people that have their own shows. I mean, it inspired me to start. There are people that want to be involved and more than just talking, more than just doing a show like this. I'm not going to get on here and pontificate and preach to others about what's wrong and what they need to do if I'm not willing to do it myself. So I do it myself. But I don't do that to necessarily say, well, I'm walking the walk because I talk the talk. I'm doing it because our country's at risk. Because I want a place for my daughter to grow up in that at least resembles a fraction of what it was when I grew up. I just want it safe and secure for her. I want her rights and liberties to be as safe as mine were for the longest time. And now that they're eroding, it's time to fight even harder. And that's why we should be standing up. That's why there's no excuses. Yeah, I get it. We work jobs. I have a full-time job, and I do this. And I'm a single parent. And I get involved with the schools. I do everything else I can. There's time out there if you want it to happen. If you want change to happen, you will shift the priority and make that happen. There is no excuse anymore to just be passive. And I get some people can't get out and physically organize. I get that some people, have disabilities that render them more challenged to get out and do those things. But there are ways that you can get involved in writing letters and contributing in other ways with resources. Helping do mailers. They're making calls to help with campaigning. There are so many things. There's so many ways that people can get involved in fundraising and whatnot. That's what we have to do. Do something. If you take an hour every day, let's say you just spend an hour every day on social media, and for many people, I'm sure it's much more than that. Let's just say it's an hour every day you spend on social media bitching about what's wrong with our government and the things that are going on, and you do nothing else. What have you changed? Nothing. You've changed nobody's mind on the other side. You've reinforced the way people on the same side feel, likely in not in a manner that makes any substantial difference to the way they feel about it one way or another. And everybody's more riled up and angry, and nothing's different. So what if you take a half an hour, and in that half hour, you do some research on your last city council meeting, on their meeting minutes, on what's their agenda, on their agenda. And you highlight a few things, you circle a few things, and make notes on things you don't understand or don't agree with and want to understand better. And the next day, you spend a half an hour, and you look up, when is the next meeting going to be? And you plan to spend time at that next city council meeting or writing a letter to contribute to that meeting to go on record that you don't agree with something. There are so many ways that you can get involved and be active. No more just bitching on the internet and not doing anything. Otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, you're as much of a problem as the left. It's just excuses, and it's inexcusable at this point in time. Be a leader, again. I want to read this small piece for you again about our founding fathers and where they came from. Thomas Jefferson, a lawyer. George Mason, a farmer, a planter. Benjamin Franklin worked in a printing shop with a newspaper. George Washington was a farmer and a map maker, worked in surveying. John Jay came a family of merchants. Patrick Henry was a store clerk. Samuel Adams was a bookkeeper. John Hancock worked as a merchant trader. Richard Henry Lee, a justice of the peace. These are just a few. Okay, there are 50 more. And their stories are all going to be very similar. That's where our leaders came from. So we don't need to wait on a leader. Be the leader. And if you're not comfortable leading, I guarantee you know somebody in your community who is. You know somebody in your life, in your area, who is vocal and has the skills and the traits to be a leader. And if you don't want to lead, then prop them up. Encourage them. Boost their morale. Champion them. Tell them how much of a leader you believe they are and how much you'd like to follow them. And what you'd like to see done. Some people just need a kick in the ass. I tell you, we got a lot of work to do, and we don't have a lot of time to do it. So let's get on this, all right? I sound like a grumpy old dick today, don't I? excuse me. I woke up this morning way on the wrong side of bed, and I have no idea why. I slept fine. I woke up, I got up, I wanted to walk the dog, and I was just, I could feel it in me. I was just irritated. I'm like, why am I irritated? It was some sunny, it was cooler, but it was a normal morning. It wasn't anything weighing on me necessarily, but I just feel like, damn, I'm grumpy today. And I felt that way most of the day, but which helps when I'm, you know, going to get on and talk about things, especially things that I'm passionate about, because it does allow me to inflect a little bit more. But damn, I'm mad, and we should all be mad, because the crap that's happening in this country, what's being done to it by the other side, is filthy. It's repugnant. There's more riots in the street again tonight in Minnesota. And that's going to continue this weekend. It's going to be much worse, I fear, there and in other areas. The weather looks favorable. I think, you know, and none of this is going to stop until we stand up and we start fighting back. And we need to organize, too. People, you know, that's another apprehension I've seen out there. Well, after January 6th, we're afraid to organize. Well, I'm not telling you to organize and bust into your state capitol building and trash the place. That's not, there's no excuse. Okay, those that broke into the Capitol on January 6th, they have to face the consequences for what they did. I think, you know, some of the consequences some of them are facing are a bit extreme. And in a case of violation of amendments, you know, rights and amendments there as well. But the point is I'm not telling you to get out and be violent. I'm telling you that if there's 100 people out there throwing cans of soup and urine and everything else at police, that get out there a block away or two blocks away, wherever you feel safe, in a group of 300 or 400 and protest against that behavior. Nothing is going to change as long as we continue to allow this stuff to happen. And we are allowing it to happen. Our police departments are castrated from being able to do much, but sit back and be defensive. And again, I get that there are some people that, for a number of reasons, can't get out there and organize. But come on, we had 75 million people vote for Trump. There are enough, there are millions of people in every metro area or its surrounding area. There are a few hundred at a minimum, more likely a few thousand or tens of thousands that are able-bodied and can get out there and demonstrate for a couple of hours. But that's what we need to do. I see, you know, in the chat they're talking about there's, you know, that's a good point. Most of this stuff does happen in blue areas. But in all of those blue areas, there are conservatives. and not just a small minority. Even if an area votes 70% Democratic, so it's a municipal area and it's 70% a Democratic vote, it's not all 70% of those people are getting out in the street and causing a problem. It's always usually 100 or so, you know, and I guarantee you there's 1,000 people that feel differently than that, that can get out and counter protest and exercise your First Amendment right. It's so frustrating. It's just frustrating. We don't do it well. Conservatives don't do it well. And until Trump started holding his rallies, we didn't. And then we stopped. We don't need Trump to lead that process. He led the way. He showed us how. He gave us the motivation. He gave us the reasons. Okay? So we have the reasons. We know how. We get out there. I get it. Conservatives work, but not around the clock. And not everybody works the first shift or the second shift or the third shift. There are enough people, enough conservatives that can get together and find time to demonstrate more frequently. Maybe it's not at the same time some of these other protests are going on. Maybe it's just you pick a random day in the month and you organize a rally of 500 or 1,000 or 3,000 and you go stand outside and protest outside your city, your city hall. Or the governor's mansion, or the state capitol. Those things, I firmly believe that there should be a conservative rally in front of every state capitol every month. There's no reason it can't happen. And the news stations as well. Another great point out of the chat, yes. Get out and organize and protest in front of these news stations about their integrity or lack thereof. We're not good at doing it. We're not good at organizing. And we come up with all like jobs and time. But I'm sorry, it's inexcusable not to do it anymore. There are ways to make it happen. And we have to do it. We have to do more of it. We did it very well for you know, 9 months last year. A year even more than that, even during the pandemic. You know, people got out and went to Trump's rallies and figured it out. Again, he gave us the reasons. He gave us the way. He doesn't need to continue to lead it. It's not going to be around forever anyway. We have a fight ahead of us that is years and generations ahead of us. We need to be the example for our kids. Not just to affect the change now, but to be the example for our kids, to show them how to stand up for your rights. And how to bring change, or how to resist destructive change. We need to give our kids the tools by our own example. All right. Hey, I'll be live again this Sunday morning, April 18th at 9 a.m. Central for Coffee with Tom, the lighter side of the news, right here on Riverside FM. I'm looking forward to that. Again, the show and all the Tommy C Show is now live Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Central and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. Central. And then the recordings will be posted Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, if not sooner than that, depending on how long it takes to process everything. But I want to thank all of you who joined the show tonight. I really appreciate you chiming in, those that are watching, those that are listening, those that decided to jump in the chat. It's always appreciated. I hope that you found this show helpful in some way, if anything, to exhaust along with me on some of these same frustrations, but also, you know, some of the insight that came from our founding fathers and how important that is and where we've lost power and where we can regain it. So that's all I have for today. If you enjoyed the show, I'd be very grateful if you'd take a minute to share it with your friends and family. Feel free to follow and engage with me on Parler. My handle is at the Tommy C Show. Or check out my website, therealtommyc.com, for other ways to contact me, to view my original articles, to check out the Truth Verified store, or to contribute to the show through PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, or by becoming a member of the show if you appreciate the commentary. Friends, it is time for all of us to passionately take action And we the people have a proud history of doing just that.